Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Saturday, July 18th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it. Give it 5 stars. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 437. I have a super special brand new guest, comedian, television host, writer, extraordinaire, Mr. Reese Waters from Get Up DC. I'm super excited to share that conversation with you. But right now I'm going to talk to you for a little bit. I'm doing pretty good on a Saturday morning. Got up pretty early. Made myself my weekly omelet. It did not look as good. It's just, I've just been on a slump where the omelets taste good, but they don't look good. And this week I decided I was going to make it, instead of making it in my nonstick pan that shit just still sticks to, I tried it in my skillet and my cast iron skillet, and it tasted good. It tasted great, actually. And it just didn't make that flip over. The omelets are tasting great. But what I've been using is this Tillamook shredded cheese. And it's fantastic. Like Tillamook cheese, Tillamook dairy products are incredible. This podcast is sponsored by Tillamook. Great cheese, great ice cream, and whatever else they make. It's really good. So, you know, I started off getting their ice cream and it's fantastic. I'm tempted to go get some the next time I go out to the store, but I try not to keep that stuff in my apartment. I just don't like it being there. You know what I mean? I like it being there, but I don't, you know, it's just the temptación. Oh my God. So yeah, so that cheese is incredible, and I can tell that it's good because Stop and Shop, which is, I guess, if you're from the Maryland, DC area, it's our equivalent of Giant. And they started, I think Trader Joe's has had Tillamook products before. The couple times I've been in a Trader Joe's, I've seen it there. But on a more mainstream, I guess Trader Joe's is mainstream, but like your standard issue grocery store, like a Stop and Shop, which is more ubiquitous in this area, they have Tillamook products. And the last time I was at the grocery store, I was like, oh, I need some cheese. I need some of that Tillamook, young. And so I went in there and it was like almost all of it was gone. And so I normally would do, like, for my omelets, I get the sharp shredded cheddar. That was all sold out. The only thing they had was the Mexican cheese, like the four cheese, shredded, you know, when you make tacos and all that kind of stuff. And so they had that. I was like, oh, I'll get that. I mean, it's Tillamook, so it can't be bad. And I use that and it's so good. My only thing is just it, and it just kind of added this great accentuation to the green peppers that I was using in my omelet. You know, I like to season my omelet pretty good. Well, too, like put a little pepper in it, a little Old Bay, a little like basil, oregano type, some concoction that I got from the store. And my parents were telling me to get some sage to put on my sausage. I like turkey sausage, butterball or Johnsonville, turkey sausage. And they're like, yeah, get you some sage and put it on your sausage and it'll taste better. You know, it'll make it taste better. And that's what they used to use growing up and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll try that. So I was at the store the other day and I got some sage and I was looking, I was like, damn, Sage is like $7. I didn't know it was that expensive because I'd never bought any before. And I told my parents, it was like, damn, why do you get that McCormick? Like, they said, get that other kind. It's like the, what is, but I forget the name that it's, you know what I'm talking about. If you go into a market and they have, it's like, it's not as expensive as McCormick. I just don't want to say the name and ruin it. And then y'all get mad at me. But I didn't see, I saw that section, but it was too many people around and I was trying to social distance. And I was like, well, I got the sage in my hand. I'm going to get it. And I take it out and I, you know, I thought, and I go into my bag to open it up. And I was like, yo, I don't have my sage, my $7 sage. Where the fuck is it? And I got home. I did not see it. And so I'm $7 in the hole for some expensive ass seasoning. But I'll get it back. I'll get it. I'll get it. I'll get some sage and try it on my sausage. Maybe I'll have to try some real swine sausage and put it on there the next time. Also, I've discovered, you guys, I don't know if you've ever heard of this or you know about this at all, but bacon is really good. I've never been a big bacon fan. Like, it's just like I like having it on my burgers. It's like a condiment. To me, it's almost like a topping for a burger. Sometimes people put it on pizza and stuff like that. I guess maybe because Margot Robbie fetishized it in that Harley Quinn movie. And I was like, oh, I'll try making one of those. And it is good. And I made a couple during the pandemic, like maybe two. I made one last week. I made one this week, a couple days ago. Because I had some leftover bacon that I was putting on burgers when I made them. And so it stays in my fridge for a while. Not like long enough for it to spoil. I know how some of y'all get. So anyway, I made it. It was so good. I made some like eggs and put some of that Tillamook cheese in it and put it on some bread. Joint was fire. So that's one of those joints that you can make sporadically. Can't have that shit in the house all the time, even as a fat guy. I understand that. I know you can't do that. So that's something that comes in the house occasionally. Other than that, what else is going on? RIP to John Lewis, obviously. I know there was a scare about a week ago. They confirmed that he finally passed away. One of the reasons why we get to do as black creatives and we get to do what we do as black people that exist in this country today are because of the efforts that he and people like him put forth and went to jail for, got beaten for it. All for us to, you know, him to at least see, you know, Barack Obama as a president for 8 years and for all of it to come undone only 4 years. So it's sad that he went out like that, but he did make progress. And I, like I said a few weeks ago, I still feel cautiously optimistic about the way things are going in a way that I haven't, that I didn't feel years ago, even when we had Obama in office. So, you know, it's sad, but, you know, his efforts are not, I don't think they're wasted. I just wish that he didn't have to go out like that with this presidency. We should have voted for the lady in the pantsuit. I know I did. And vote for people. Make the pragmatic choice, not just because you were. Let me be quiet. Because black people and other people of color have done that for years. What else? Let's, on a lighter note, big music week. I'll probably go in depth on a Patreon episode, but fantastic week for music, for nerds like me. I mean, Blue in Exile released an album called Miles. You remember me talking about, just throughout the years of me doing this show, how much I love Blue in Exile. Below the Heavens, to me, is one of the greatest hip-hop debuts of all time. I'll go to my grave saying that. I don't care that they're not as popular as some of your favorite rappers, but it's true to me and a lot of my nerd friends, a couple of them. At least me and my best friend. At least the two people it is. I just felt like Blue is a talented MC, and I've celebrated all of his works. There's some that I don't even know because he just doesn't really promote his stuff like that. But whenever I'm catching him on something, it's like, that's great. Oh, this is a new project. Oh, he sounds great. But when he's with Exile, when those two team up, it's nothing like it, man. It's a special chemistry that they have. It's something that they bring out of the greatness that they bring out of each other. And it's just it's remarkable. So the whole album's like an hour and a half, and they're doing like it's kind of long. But I mean, in this day and age, it's definitely kind of long. But there's some records that I like better than the others. But man, the first record is just like you could just tell like Blue was on his shit. I'm trying to think the name of this record, and then I'll say a couple more things, and I'll get you to Reese. It's just the record's called Blue. It's the first record. It's like 2 minutes and 18 seconds. It's just like, damn, it starts like this. Holy shit. And then I'll give you Leanne LeHavis released a self-titled third album, I want to say. It's her first album in about 5 years. And it's self-titled. She's amazing. She's like, I'm in love with her. She's fantastic. A couple nights ago, she did this virtual concert at the let me just calm down and tell you what she did. She did this virtual concert, and it was, I think it was at the Roundabout Theater in London. The Roundhouse in London a couple days ago. And I paid like $15 and they send you a link and you watch it on YouTube. It was great. I don't know what they're going to do with that. Maybe they're going to package it in some type of way, or maybe that was just like a one-time thing, but it was awesome. And she's incredible, man. Since I've heard of her, I've heard of her on her, like, I think maybe her second. Let me look her up. This is just going to be a long episode, and I'll get you to Reese. This is just going to be a long intro, so just fucking deal with it. Let's see. Okay, so she had an album out in 2012 called Is Your Love Big Enough? And then she came out with Blood in 2015. And then the self-titled project is 2020. So this is her third album. She's got some EPs and stuff, but like, yeah. So when Blood came out, like, she had this record called Unstoppable. And that was like, oh my God, who is this? This is a dope record. And I liked her. Like, I liked her album. I was like, okay, she's good. And then I saw her on NPR Tiny Desk a few years ago. That's up there as being one of my favorite Tiny Desk performances. And I was like, oh my God, I like her. I love her even more. And this one, it just seemed like it was just the self-titled project's just like really stripped down. And her vocally, she's just insane. And there's just so much, you know, resonance in her voice. She's great. So that's that. And there's more stuff. Odyssey dropped a project EP called The Cure. So much other stuff. I'll probably talk about it on a Patreon ep pretty soon. I'll talk about some music because I've been able to listen to a bunch of music while I'm doing extended hours doing TPS reports. So without further ado, let's get you to Reese. Reese Waters is a guy that he's a comedian. He's from the area. He's from the Maryland, D.C. area. Always a guy that I just kind of respected from afar. Just thought he was a cool dude and doing like all these great things. And I've been fortunate enough to do his barbershop show that he does on YouTube and everything like that. Been fun getting to know him and stuff through the homie Randolph Terrence and being a part of a lot of those shows that they do. And I said, you know, Reese, come on the show. Love to have you. And we made it happen. And this is what happened. So I'm going to share that conversation with you right now. So please enjoy me and the great Reese Waters. Yeah. I guess we could just start. I've currently have NBA TV on mute. And I don't know this. I didn't know this. Maybe you did, but they're doing like a round table with like Shaq, Dwayne Wade, Vince Carter, Penny Hardaway, and Candace Parker. And they're talking about, when I turned the TV on, I didn't know this, but the only shoes that Michael, when Jordan, Jordan always wore his sneakers on the court, but the one time he didn't wear his Jordans, he wore Pennies. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Wait, so only one game he didn't wear Jordans in his career, is that it?
According to this, now nerds will probably look at this and say no, but Penny, I mean, it's the man himself and everybody else seems to be going along with it. I'd never heard of this. I mean, you got guys that would actually know, so that's crazy to me.
You know what's interesting? So my first favorite basketball player was Scottie Pippen.
Okay.
I loved Scottie Pippen. And we used to, you know, growing up in DC, we got WGN. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It sounds like I'm lying when I tell people I grew up in DC and I watched all the Bulls games.
Dude, we talked about that on your show. We talked about exactly. That on the barbershop. Yeah. Yeah.
So I love Scottie Pippen. Everybody loved Jordan. I liked Jordan. I didn't have an issue with Jordan. Like, I liked Jordan, but I loved Scottie Pippen.
Right.
My second favorite player was Penny Hardaway. And, of course, this was at the height of Shaq mania.
Mm-hmm.
But Penny was my dude. And then my third was Grant Hill. Even though I hesitate to admit that I liked Duke as a child. I was a bit of a troll. I've always been a bit of a troll, and I think that was that part of me. I just since grown up and grown into my blackness, and now I know that.
I didn't even think that's so weird. It you know what though, man? It doesn't seem like I was an ACC guy, so I mean, like it's the same thing. Like you just kind of rooted for the teams. Like my parents were from North Carolina, and so we were just like, oh, we want the whoever made it. You know, that far in the tournament, we would root for them. And they would Jefferson Pilot Sports. You know, you'd see all these teams. And it's not until, like, you get into your 20s and then you see that Fab Five documentary that what that means socially. I Grant Hill.
I was pretty aware.
You were?
Of what it meant. I was pretty aware, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you were more woke than I was.
I mean, you know, I just knew that it was not okay to root for Duke and my family, and it was not okay to root for the Boston Celtics. You couldn't root for the Celtics, and you could not root for Duke. Those were the two things. You didn't necessarily have to be a Lakers fan, but you could have chosen the Pistons. You could have chosen the Bulls. You could not choose Boston.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was saying, I look at that through line between Scottie Pippen and Penny Hardaway and Grant Hill, and, like, they're all great players, but they were all second bananas.
They all got
Even
hurt,
Grant
too.
Hill at the time with Duke was, like, the second banana. Like, they're all kind of quiet, Swiss Army knife, do everything, like, leader but not the marquee guy. On their teams, and I'm like, am I destined to be a second banana? Like, this is weird that, like, I like all these dudes that are like that are not the lead guy, and I'm like, do I just have no alpha quality about me?
It's
maybe that's what it is.
Maybe, and it's probably one of the reasons that makes you a comic too. I always thought about that, like the guy, like even like I liked R&B. We talked about R&B stuff, you know, last week on the barbershop. I was thinking of like. Some of the bands that I like, the R&B cats, I was like, maybe I could fit in, and maybe I'm not the lead singer, but I could hold a note, and I could do my little dances. I could learn those dances. It would take me the longest, but I could learn them. I could fit
That's
in.
Funny.
Some girls would like me. Not all
That's
of them,
true.
But some.
You would get that runoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would get that runoff. You know, I was thinking about actually, you know, I was thinking about doing the podcast with you. I was like, you know, one of the you've done my YouTube show, The Barbershop, several times. And when it gets to music, I always have to kind of see, because one of the things I know about myself is I have terrible taste in music.
How
Which
so?
Isn't to say that I don't like good music. It's that I also like bad music equally.
Mm.
Like I openly love music that I accept the consensus is that it's garbage and won't know the difference between that and supposedly classic works. Like I like just about everything, especially if I hear it enough times.
Okay.
So I'm a terrible arbiter of that.
I love music, dude. Sometimes I could feel, I think the older I've gotten, the less of a snob, you know. I think maybe when I was in college, I was more of a snob, but, you know, he's like, you like what? Because I used to have a radio show in undergrad, and I used to play like R&B stuff. And I used to, you know, I would tape the shows and then listen to them in my car, you know, and I would be, you'd be with a girl or something, and she'd be, oh, you just like hearing yourself on the radio. You just like hearing your own voice. I was like, nah, I like this mix. I laid it down with this mix right here.
That's
A little Raphael Sadiq and Kevin Edmonds. Right after each other, you know, but go ahead.
No, I was saying, see, like, I'm a big Jodeci fan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know that it's possible for me to enjoy any piece of R&B more than I enjoy Diary of a Madman. Like, I don't think it's possible.
Well, that's a great album.
I'm just saying, like, you can give me some, you know, genre bending, you know, unbelievable vocal performances, and I just won't like it as much as I like Diary of a Madman. That's why I say, like, I'm just weird and quirky with my taste in music.
I think we're the same age, so it's, I mean, I remember when I first started buying CDs, the very first CD I bought was Tevin Campbell, the I'm Ready album.
I'm Ready, yes.
His second one, and it was like the Boyz II Men Christmas album. And then a few weeks later, it was that Diary of a Mad Band. And that's when you really start, you know, your taste. I would say like junior high, you know, like just like sixth grade, you're listening to, I was listening to Another Bad Creation. I liked the Boys. I liked R. Kelly. R. Kelly didn't come till like eighth grade, though. Seventh, eighth grade, junior.
R. Kelly was a little advanced for me.
He was, and you know what,
I didn't pick up a lot of what he was throwing down, fortunately, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember liking Aaliyah. It's so funny, like, I bought that tape, and we went on a field trip to King's Dominion, and I had that Age Ain't Nothing But a Number out. That was her first album. Mm-hmm. Aaliyah was maybe at least 1 year older than me, and I was thinking like to myself, is it cool if I ever met her and I could date her, even though she was older than me? And then she has that album, and ironically, you know, she was married to the guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always been, R&B has always been my base. And then like high school, like junior high school, I went to Bishop McNamara.
Okay.
And I was at like Catholic school, like from K through 12, and really undergrad too. And so we had, once I got to McNamara, there were guys that were coming from other schools in PG, like the public schools and stuff. And they introduced me to like the hardcore hip hop. Back then, Method Man, Wu-Tang Clan, ODB was kind of hardcore. Eric Sermon, Keith Murray. And I was like, okay, like the New York cats. I was like, all right, I like these dudes too. But I was kind of like R&B. I liked Immature back then. And they had some shit too. They had, you know, did some messed up stuff. But I didn't know that. I knew that. So, go ahead.
Wait, Immature? Oh, wait, you mean
Marcus
what's going
Houston
on right now? You mean what's going on right now? Or was there stuff back in the day?
Well,
I didn't know anything about back in the day.
Apparently, like, the Chris Stokes, their manager, allegedly might have did some stuff to some kids. It's like some stuff is connected to B2K. It's a whole lot. It's
because the guy that Raz B has accused, right?
Right.
Because B2K is definitely after my time. I don't know B2K.
Yeah.
But I'm aware of them.
Right.
And I know them as adults. Like, I know that Omarion is like the patron saint of being unbothered, and how he was able to deal with his baby mama dealing with his bandmate. I mean, he will forever. That's goals right there. That's absolute goals right there. So, but I know more about that than I do about their actual music.
I just remember their first album and this woman I dated in college. Like, she had it, and they had some songs on the first one. And Omarion definitely had a solo career. And I met him when I worked at Best Buy. He came in when I was at Chicago. He's a nice guy.
Nice. Well, Icebox and Speedin' is my joint.
Speedin', I don't remember that. I know Icebox.
I'm speedin'. Yeah, that joint. I know Omarion for that. I was gonna say about Immature. So I don't know that there's a band that has fewer hits that I've heard more times. Like, I've listened to Never Lie and Constantly at least 1,000 times a piece.
Yeah.
And I've never needed another song.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it. They did have another one. Please Don't Go. Right? Yeah. Please Don't Go was pretty good too.
They had some B-sides. They had some B-sides that worked. That was like that transition where, like, oh, this may not be cool anymore. I didn't care what was cool, but I could definitely. There was one girl I remember. She said she kind of looked like Tia and Tamara, and I had a crush on her. And she said, "Yeah, it's okay that you like them, Chris," because somebody was making fun of, like, "You like Immature." But that was like that time where that shift was like, okay, right. It's hip hop, and then like
when it wasn't cool, yeah,
yeah. Because for me, like it was definitely like Tribe Called Quest, Snoop Dogg, and I was like really real West Coast heavy, to be honest with you. Like in junior high, it was like, you know, Menace to Society soundtrack, Murder Was the Case. My dad had to buy that for me at Sam Goody at the Forestville Mall. Like, he had to get it. I couldn't buy it because I was too young.
But he bought it for you?
He did buy it for me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did.
Corrupting
to
you.
I know. Yeah, he took me to see Martin Lawrence, the You So Crazy. He took me Marlow Heights, that movie theater at Marlow Heights.
Oh, man, that must have been hood. By the way, still, I did want to tell this story. So before we get off of Immature, right? So
sure.
There was a girl in high school that I had a crush on. And I was a colossal nerd, which, by the way, if we get into origins, yeah, I'm like... I am like your archetypical nerd who finds comedy. But I said, you know what's going to kill her, though? You know what's going to turn all of this around, all of this Urkeldom, okay? All of this 2.5 years of following her around and her not giving me the time of day. I'm going to tape Constantly off of WPGC onto this cassette tape, and I'm going to slide it in her mailbox. That's what's going to turn all of this around for me.
So you stalked her. You knew where she lived.
No. Sorry. In her mailbox at school.
Okay. All right. I was like, yeah, okay, Reese. Wow.
Oh, damn. I don't even know the statute of limitations up on that. Like, come on, man. You trying to get me bored?
No, I don't want you. Nah. We got to keep you employed, man. Nah,
no, that was good for having me clarify.
Good.
I'd have had to go back and forth on the internet. Yeah. No, her mailbox at school. So I did. I dropped it in her mailbox at school, and I've never had more swagger in my life than walking away from that mailbox, because I just knew that was going to kill him right there. When she it was like a little note, like from Reese or whatever. It was something like very short and subtle. But to me, Constantly was like, every lyric of that song is exactly what I wanted to communicate. I didn't need to add nothing to perfection.
And what happened?
A few hours later, my boy tells me, he goes, "Hey, did you hear about what happened with that tape?" And I was like, "Nah, what happened?" No, he goes, "Hey, did you put a tape in old girl's mailbox?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. Yeah, you heard about it." He goes, "Yeah, so they're clowning it right now. Evidently, because it was like I went to St. Olaf's all boys school, it was the all girls school, which was across the way.
What was the all girls school?
NCS. It was very creatively called National Cathedral School because it's on the grounds of National Cathedral.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We graduated there from in high school. The cathedral.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah.
So basically she found the tape, listened to it, thought it was hilarious. And they proceeded to play it as a joke in the lunchroom at the girls' school while roasting me in absentia. I didn't even have to be there, and they were roasting me. And evidently, the cool dudes who could go over there and hang out, because if I wasn't dropping off a mixtape, I really had no reason to be over there. the dudes that actually got attention from girls at the time were over there. And they were taking part, and that's how the story made its way back over to me. So you know what? I used to be like a lover. I used to write poems. I thought I was pretty good at writing poems, actually. And this is one of those moments when a savage is created.
Yeah,
you know, this is one of those moments that causes toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
You fast forward 20 years. Is it 20 years? About 20 years. Yeah. I'm back here in DC and hosting the morning show, and this woman who went to my high school is now a local artist, like a local, like here in DC, like she's a local singer here in DC.
Uh-huh.
And she was coming to the station to do promo, and I found out about it.
Oh my
God.
And
I was like, hey, can I do this interview? And they were like, yeah, I mean, like, why would you? I was like, yeah, no, don't worry about it. Like, I let me do this interview.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
All right, cool. So she comes out and I'm like, you know, I give her a hug, do the whole thing.
Did she remember you?
I didn't say anything to make it seem like I kind of like downplayed that I knew her. Like I didn't, and she didn't say anything. At the time. So I don't know if she did at this time.
Okay.
So we sit down and I go, yeah, so what happened in 10th grade? I put a cassette tape in your mailbox and I just need to know what happened. Like, she's here to talk about like her album. She's here to talk about what's going on. I'm just like, yeah, so 10th grade, like, I just want to know what happened because, you know, I really, and that's when it all like kind of hit her and came together and she put two and two together. I'll give her credit. She played it off very well. She's had a long time to be prepared for this question. Not that she knew that it was going to come at this moment,
wow.
But she played it off very well. But she denied, she claims that whoever told me the story trumped it up and that it really wasn't, like, she did think it was sweet. And She did not deny that I was clowned. She said that she didn't take part in it.
Mm.
So she was like, they were clowning you, okay? I'm not going to let your self-esteem off the hook there. They were clowning you. I just was not, you know, that's not what I wanted to have happen. And I was like, okay, I appreciate that.
Was this in the actual interview or was this post-interview?
This was in the actual interview.
Savage.
This was most of the interview. We talked about that for about 10 minutes, and then in the end, I was like, "Yeah, so are you doing something now? Like, what do you have going on?"
So you got an album.
I did. So you're doing stuff, okay? So you know, I say all that to say, first of all, thank you to Immature for those hits. I cannot. I think I probably have to get off the bus with y'all now because of the recent.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can ride with that. But, you know, to everybody listening, sometimes life brings that girl who clowned you right into your lap to get the answers that you wanted on camera.
That's great, man. That's a great story.
Yeah.
That's you got to make that a bit.
That's
I don't think I've ever had anything like that happen. But yeah, that's a good way. I hope she was able to laugh at that.
I think she was a little bit embarrassed when she left.
Okay.
By the whole thing, which I had no problem with because I've been embarrassed about that for 20 years.
You have to message me who that is when after we're done.
Fair enough.
Yeah, dude, like that's do you ever get to go to shows and stuff? Like where before we got locked down, did you go to concerts and stuff like that?
You know what? I get to go. So my fiance is on Great Day Washington, which is basically like our entertainment show.
Okay.
And they get tickets to everything. Like they can go to everything. Because I'm in the news, there's like ethics issues about that. So I can't actually receive anything, but she can, and she can ask on my behalf.
Okay.
So we work like a little two-man game. So sure. I go to a fair amount of things, but yeah, you know, a lot of times it's kind of what she wants to go to.
Cool. Yeah. I try to every time when I get a chance, right before the shutdown, I was going to see this dude, Gallant, who's actually from Columbia, Maryland. He's an R&B guy. He's a soulful guy, but he's kind of pop. But he's fantastic. And I was like bummed out that I wasn't gonna get to see that. But yeah, every now and then, like when you're working so much, like doing shows and working, it's hard to like get to do that stuff. So you're where did you actually grow up? You grew up in PG County. What area? What town?
So I grew up. I always have trouble answering where I'm from. I always say PG County. I mean, uh-huh. I was born in DC, but my mother lived in Forestville at the time.
That's where I grew up.
Did you?
Okay, technically, see, this is weird.
Shout out to Penmar.
Okay. This is because, like, when I look at your Instagram, like, you're really heavy with the Throwback Thursdays and the cities that you're all, it's always different. It's like Forestville, it's like Oxon Hill, but maybe that's like the locations where you were.
Yeah.
What I just realized, like, I want to say within the last 10 years, 10 to 15 years, like, I grew up in District Heights, but I always thought it was Forestville. It's so weird because I grew up, you know where Suitland High School is?
Uh-huh.
So they had this development that's probably 20 plus years old. I lived, they had this development of townhouses. Damn, I'm telling people where my parents, but I basically lived in that area, like near where the KFC and Wendy's used to be and the 7-Eleven. I lived in that area. And I always thought that was Forestville. And I went to St. Francis in D.C., in Southeast D.C., and then I moved to Mount Calvary Catholic School and then went to McNamara for high school. That was Forestville. Like, that was like, it was kind of like a hodgepodge of, like, Forestville and District Heights. It was so, but now the area code is, like, it's District Heights. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets tough, you know, when you're kind of in and out of the city around different places. Cause I mean, I was in Forestville till I was, so I lived in Forestville, but I went to high school. I went to school at Capitol Heights, right? Cause I was in this tag magnet program. Okay. So I never went to like the local high school or the local elementary school. But then when I was seven, we moved to Upper Marlboro.
Okay.
So, and my parents still live in Upper Marlboro. So we moved out there, but then when I went to high school, I went to St. Albans, which is in D.C. Mm-hmm. So you tell me where the hell I'm from, man.
Well, you're
Am I from Forestville? Am I from Upper Marlboro? Am I from PG County? Am I like, where am I? I always say PG County because I can't really claim Forestville through 7th.
Yeah.
And I can't really claim Upper Marlboro, which is basically just 7 to 12 or 13.
I would just say you're from PG. And you could. See, I don't know because I don't live there anymore, but I would just say you could claim all of them. But then somebody that lives there, like, fuck that, dog. You from whatever. So I don't know. And they wouldn't say fuck that, dog. They say, come on, young. You ain't from, you know, you would be from somewhere.
Chill, Mo.
Yeah.
Chill, Mo.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. But I would just claim you as a homeboy. Like you were just always, because I think you were already gone by the time that I started stand up. And then I saw you one time at the Stand and you were talking to somebody. So I didn't introduce myself, but you were just always somebody that I respected from afar. I was like, oh, there's a,
cool. Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You mean in New York?
Yeah. In New York. Yeah. In New York. Cause okay. I didn't know, like, yeah. I didn't know, like, I was just like, oh, Reese, you're a cool black guy that's doing stuff. Like, you know, you were just a comic that was doing stuff, and I was like, okay, that's a cool dude. And then and that's when I found out that you were from the area. So what was it like for you? You could paint with a broad brush, but you were in the magnet schools and stuff. What was that like? Was it rigorous?
The work wasn't hard, but the socialization was brutal. You know, it's hard. You know, one of the issues that is actually kind of we're talking about like now, like today, is how you integrate these white spaces, but do it in a way where you don't cause trauma, right?
Yeah.
To the individual, because I mean, I'll be honest, you know, when I was in Forestville, that was all black.
Right.
There was a couple white people here or there, but that was all black. My mother sacrificed, you know, to try and put me in the best possible educational circumstance that she could. And that was getting me in this tag magnet program. So my understanding is that this is something that's better.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm at Capitol Heights Elementary School. Well, they have tag, but they also have the non-tag, which they call comprehensive.
Is that talented and gifted?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Okay.
So they have talented and gifted, and then the non the non-talented, it's non-gifted. So,
dude, that shit is like, it's good if you're on the top tier, and you could have self-esteem. That could go either way. But when they split you up like that, group A and group B, it's a different thing. And I've been fortunate.
They did not like us.
And I
didn't really get it at the time. And then I grew up and I was like, oh,
that was kind of fucked
up.
Yeah,
that was very fucked up.
Yeah.
So, but this is the thing. Forestville's all black.
Mm-hmm.
The non-talented and gifted is all black. The talented and gifted was like a normal breakdown.
Yeah.
Right. Which is like, we're like 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you as a child, right? That can't help but imprint on your young brain that there's something that I have to overcome. It was very difficult for me to be in that environment and not internalize some kind of inferiority complex.
Mm.
And so that was a struggle. And it was hard for me, you know, they didn't really accept me back in my neighborhood because I didn't go to high school with them, right? So it's almost like, I didn't go to school with them. So it's like, oh, well, you think you're better than us? You can't, you know, you gotta take the bus all the way over to, the Capitol Heights and go to school because they all went to Arrowhead. And so, you know, and this is all like not even choices that I made. None of this is choices that I made. This is just my circumstance. So, you know, I feel like there was like a otherness and kind of like a lone wolf aspect that started to manifest itself even by circumstance. I think I probably have some of that naturally as well. If I look at like my dad, you know, I think I definitely had some of that naturally, but the circumstance absolutely pushed me and in that direction even further. So
what did your parents do?
A young comic was born.
That has everything to do with you being that, most of it. Like what did your parents do? What did they do for a living?
My mother is like a lifelong politico.
Okay.
So she's worked for a bunch of congressmen. She worked for the Department of Transportation. And so she's like your local mover and shaker and in political circles and whatnot.
Yeah.
My dad is like a technical writer. He was a technical writer at the sure. time, which I yeah. believe is kind of like an engineer kind of thing. I've always been a little murky on what
I know. I had a professor in high school, in undergrad, that was a technical writer. He would, I'm trying to get an example of what he used to do, like some kind of aeronautics. Some he would do some work for some aeronautics firm or something, and he would make the language palatable for plebeians to be able to read and something. I don't know, but I know I have an idea of what it means.
All right, how you doing?
Yeah.
All right. Look at you teaching me about my own dad and what he did. I appreciate that, man. You learn something new in the mundane cockle.
Something like that. Something like, I don't know. Something like that. And so you just, it's interesting because my experience was just like all black from like preschool to sixth grade. And my parents moved me to another school. Mount Calvary was just, it was a little bit of everybody, but it was predominantly white, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And it was, and that's kind of where, you know, like I remember one time a teacher getting mad at a black kid who was new to the school. And she said, I wish you would just go back to where you came from. And I was like, damn. I was like, wow. And we and the black kids like laughed because we knew mm-hmm. it was racist. And we were just like, wow. Wow. We were just like, wow, really? Because we were like 13. And at that time, I was listening to Paul Mooney. I was listening to Martin, all of that. You know, like I knew I had that awareness. And it was just like, wow, like really? So my parents wanted to prepare me to be around everybody. And high school, McNamara was, at the time, it was predominantly black, but the administration was white. We had some black teachers and stuff, but it was never, I was thinking about this, like the DeSean Jackson stuff and the Steven Jackson, Nick Cannon.
I'm just seeing
it. It just popped up. Yeah, like that he
was
lost.
Was it that bad? I haven't even seen what he said yet.
It was about a 2-minute clip, and he was just talking about the white people and they're savages in the Caucasoid mountains and shit, and they're built to be evil. It was just like, oh, Nick, come on, dog. You know, it's like, wow. Why would you mess up your bag? You know, or just it, basically it's what it is. It's about being well-rounded. And I was just thinking about like the experiences that I had where I was saying on the show last week where, you know, I did go to a Catholic high school, but we learned about Islam, we learned about world religions. My big 10th grade trip was to go to the Holocaust Museum. You know, we wow. and then, you know, like when 9/11 happened, I wasn't like, we got to get those blah, blah, blahs, those racial epithets. It was like, no, these are people that are like, you know, fanatics that did what they did. It's obviously fucked up. It's not to look. Everybody's prejudiced to a certain degree. But I just know that experience, my education helped me to be more well-rounded, you know. And I think a lot of, and then I've been saying this for years on the show where it's just like people don't have any empathy for each other. And just to build yourself up, you don't have to tear anybody down. But I don't know how I got onto this, but it just made me think about, I think you have to have that growing up, like being, I think it's just important to be well-rounded as much as possible.
Well, I mean, that educational component is powerful, and it's also powerful to have interactions with people. You know, for me, the greatest predictor of not growing those kinds of resentments and ideals is interacting with people.
Yeah.
And especially at a young age, when you don't interact, that's how those ideas can fester and grow. Cause there's nobody to teach you or prove you or show you any different. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things I love about, about New York, what I loved about being in New York.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think for me, it, you know, everything was very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wasn't around was the people at your school.
Mm.
You know, I think that was an environment that I needed at that point just for my own socialization, because the work was never an issue.
Yeah. Right?
And even when I went to St. Albans, the work was never an issue. But I was so I don't know if under socialized is a word, but like I was so underdeveloped emotionally.
Huh.
And so that's what I needed more than anything else. I actually contemplated. So when we went to, when it was time to start doing colleges, I was looking into HBCUs, which at St. Albans is like unheard of. It literally, I'm like, hey, do you guys have any information on Morehouse? They're like, who? I'm like, Morehouse, like down in Atlanta. They're like, okay, we'll look into it. They had no, like, I had to do all the HBCU stuff on my own. If it wasn't Princeton, Yale, or Duke, they were not here for any of that.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, man, like I went and I took the visit down there and I'm like, wow, a lot of this feels like it would be the perfect complement to everything that I've experienced up to this point, would be to go to an HBCU. And I still believe that probably would have been the case, but there was a lot of pressure. There was so much pressure not to do that. It was a big deal.
From who? From parents or the school?
From the school. It was a big deal what school was next to your name when they do that, you know, those announcements and those printouts and those newsletters and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my God, yeah.
And especially considering my graduating class had three black people in it. Three.
Holy shit. Now, were you there? So,
I'm like, I have to put on, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I was a good student. So I'm if I end up going to walk, I'm literally considering all of these things, just the ramifications of where I choose to go to college. And it ended up, fortunately, kind of being a moot point, because I went to New York. I took my last college trip to New York to go to Columbia and just fell in love with the city.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with me ended up doing stand-up. So I ended up making my choice outside of those concerns, but it certainly helped that it was Ivy League.
Yeah.
It certainly helped that, like, you know, I didn't go up there and was like, oh, Pace. No, like, it helped.
And it's not a bad school, but it's just
no.
So
fun. No. No.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
I checked the boxes.
That's so interesting, because I talk about that all the time. Now, I would have just assumed that St. Albans was more intense than McNamara. I felt like I got a good education, and it prepared me for a lot of the stuff, everything that I'm doing in life. But because we would get that. We would get, like, when you talk about honors, like, you think about, like, this school, Bishop McNamara is a college preparatory school. And you're taking, like, if I remember, they started to make the separation from everybody, like, in 10th grade. So it was like you would either be in AP English or Honors English or College Prep. And if you were in AP English or you were in Honors, you would look, people would kind of look down. They would make fun of you for, like, being in just college prep. Like, the stuff that you're learning is getting you into college. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But, like, you're making fun of these people. And when they started, it was a big hullabaloo. God, that sounds so corny. But it was a big it was a big hubbub about all of that. And it was so weird. And, like, it was, and you, and looking back, that was really shitty, because, like, people would say, you know, and maybe, I don't know, like, because I always talk about this, they put everybody's name in a glass case, everybody that made the honor roll, and your GPA was there. And when the report cards come out, your parents would get them the first semester. I think the first two quarters, you wouldn't see your report card until your parent came to pick you up, and you had to talk to every teacher and in the gym. Like all the teachers would be set up at a little desk, and you had to make an appointment, and you sit down, and your teacher would go through your grades, and like that was like that was hardcore shit. And and by the time when you were senior year, they would put your name, all the schools you got accepted to, and all the money that was attached to each of those schools, and that you got, like the scholarship money.
Okay.
And they weren't fucking around. So I can imagine that St. Albans had to be even more intense. Right?
I mean, but St. Albans, like we took the SATs as sophomores.
Shit.
Right? And if you had to take it after that, you were an idiot. Literally, to take the SAT after your sophomore year, you were like, it was embarrassing. You had to take it with the, so like if you had to take it your junior year, you had to take it with the sophomores, and they literally treated you like you were a failure in life because you had to take the SATs again. And the class below me, the class when I was a junior, this sophomore class took the SATs. I think that class had probably 81, 82 kids in it.
Mm-hmm.
They had
that's really nine small.
Perfect scores.
Wow.
Had nine perfect scores as sophomores.
Damn.
And it was only a class of like 80-something.
Jesus. We had 150, and I thought that was small. Damn.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like, I couldn't even imagine. I mean, the shit that we did, asshole shit. Like you, I would think, like, you know, if somebody, their parents, if you went to McNamara, your parents like busted their ass, spending money for you to go to school, and for college, you only went to PG Community College. PG Community College at the time was one of the best community colleges in the country. At least 20 years ago, it was. I'm not sure what it is now. But people used to call that Largo U. And the arrogance that people had at that school was like, I'm ashamed to say maybe I was kind of a part of that, but only in the way that it was just like, the pressure for me was my parents are busting their ass to send me to the school. I gotta do numbers. Right. So I would not look down on somebody. I would just be like, man, why are you like fucking up your parents' money? So that's like, to me,
I didn't have that level of responsibility at all.
You know,
I felt more, at that age, I felt more racial, like pride. Like I felt like I had to do it because they let me in. And I wanted to prove that we could do it.
Yeah.
And not have them to have a reason to not let somebody else in. You know, that's kind of where my mind was at that time.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's a heavy burden for somebody that's like 17, 18. That's a lot. Like you don't even think about it. And my parents were never like, you know, they were just like, do your job. You know what I mean? It's like you have to, and some of it was I put it on myself too. That was pressure, and it was just like, and I'm just assuming that you did better in school than I did. I would just assume that it like you said, it came easier for you. So it was just like I finished National Honor Society and all that stuff, but I was into this girl like senior year, and it just really technically junior into senior year. And it's one of the women that I should have dated anyway, but that's 20 years ago. But yeah, that's crazy. So you get to New York, and what's New York like for you being a kid from PG County? How did that change you?
You talked about your dad taking you to go see Martin Lawrence and Bon Medicine Society. Let me tell you, when your dad doesn't do that, and you're in a prep school environment or tag magnet environment, and then all of a sudden you get dropped in New York City and you're by yourself, you lose your mind. Okay. I stayed drunk from the day I was dropped off until probably Christmas break. I remember they gave us, I think, 10 days of orientation at that time, which, by the way, they no longer do because the attrition rate at the end of 10 days was so intense. They would literally lose like 10% of their class before classes even started because kids were just going crazy for 10 days with nothing to do in New York City but go to these like random parties and events. But I remember the first day of classes, my girl Lauren Johnson, who I'm still friends with, she's a professor now. Okay. Shout out to her. We were going out and partying every night of orientation. And I remember one day I just woke up, you know, hungover, and went to her dorm room. She was there with a couple other friends, and they weren't there. And I'm like, that's weird. Like they must have gone to get something to eat. All right, whatever. So I went and I went down to the bodega, got myself a 40. There was no shorty. But I got myself a 40 and I went back to go kick it. And I waited. And before long, a couple of hours had passed. And I'm like, where are they? This is the weirdest thing. All of a sudden, they all come barreling in and they see me like laying on her bed. And they're like, yo, what are you doing here? I'm like, what do y'all do? Like, where y'all been? Like, what are we doing? They were like, you didn't register for classes, did you? And I was like, oh.
Oh, my God.
That was today?
Holy shit.
Literally classes started. And I was not registered for any classes because I spent the entire orientation making up for lost time.
Oh, my God.
I ended up in the weirdest classes my first semester in college. I'm in like PE and like all these weird things. But you know, I had a hard time. As I mentioned, like I was very under, you know, my socialization was not where it should have been for a 17-year-old at the time.
Yeah.
So to just be dropped into New York City, I was not at all prepared for that. Fortunately, St. Albans had done enough to get me in fit academic shape where I was able to withstand my own behavior. So I was able to battle against it and survive and keep my head above water despite my best efforts.
That's great, man. Cause it's, I can only imagine what that must have been like being, cause I didn't really get a taste of, I went to Mount St. Mary's and that's in Emmitsburg and that's like in the middle of nowhere. And if you wanted to have fun, you would go to Frederick, which was like 20 miles south, and we'd go to the mall and stuff and go to Checkers or something, but it was nothing. There was not that much there. And then when I went to grad school for theater, I was in Chicago. So that's like kind of like when the world opened up for me, but I was still a square. You know, like I was a square. I was just like, I'm gonna do my art and I'm gonna do some acting. And you know, like, we would hang out. We'd go to Chicago's a bar town and you go to bars and hang out and stuff, but it wasn't. Yeah, I was pretty square. My 24.
Well, I mean, look, like one of the reasons why, I mean, that was twofold, right? Like part of it was that I hadn't been exposed to that and I didn't have the freedom. But the second part of it was, and it's something that took me a long time to understand, was that throughout all these experiences growing up, I didn't really have a love of self.
Mm.
And I didn't have an acceptance of self. And a lot of my motivation was in spite of self, right? Was to try and prove something. So for me to go out, you know, for me to all of a sudden have alcohol at my disposal and pot and, you know, Lord knows. I mean, we're in New York City, like use your imagination.
Of course. Literally,
whatever you want.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, all of that anxiety and all of that self-loathing and all of that judgment and all those, all that fell away. Right. So yeah. I was always going to be I was always going to be vulnerable whenever that time came, but because it came so late, I was even more vulnerable.
Mm. Yeah, that's something though, man. Like, and you just overcame. Like, you still knew you had a job to do. You still knew you had to get that paper at the end of the yeah. 4 years. Yeah.
Oh no, I wasn't coming. Nah, I wasn't coming back here.
Yeah,
because like my motivation was to stay in New York.
Yeah,
I was like, I got to work hard enough to enable another semester of all of this.
Did you do all dorm life? Because it's a different. It's a really different thing. Like. Because when I moved to Chicago, there were underclassmen that there, you know, undergrad kids that you could definitely see the city taking its toll on these kids. And these kids that I'm dealing with are conservatory kids. They're artists, and some of them didn't make it. Like, some of them didn't finish, and they were kind of that's what your 20s are for anyway, to a certain degree.
I'm curious about Chicago because I've long said that if you went to Columbia, NYU, Fordham, Pace, any of these schools in New York, if you went there undergrad, you do not go to college.
Yeah.
You went to something completely different in New York City. Like the idea of like these dorm parties and the idea of like these keg parties and these frat parties. And yeah. like we didn't have that. Like we went to clubs.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like we were going downtown. Like we would go see, you know, we would pregame and then go see like, you know, Black Star was big at that time.
Of
like
most oh my God.
Like, so oh my like, God. We were going down. That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
And so not saying one is better than the other. It's just different. Like, we didn't have that experience. So a lot of the experiences that people have in their 20s when they moved to New York, we had in college. But I missed that opportunity. You know, but what you lose out on is that sense of campus community.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no campus community. You have your friends, but you literally have access to all of New York City. So why in the world are we going to stay on Columbia University and socialize when I literally have a million different places I could go. Right?
That's like, to me, it's got to feel like sensory overload. And I don't know. Like, I don't think I would. I think I would have been like you and not fucked off and got my degree. But I don't know if my thing is the traumatic thing that happened to me when I was a kid. I had lost a cousin right before I graduated to the drugs that he used and it ended up with him getting murdered. And so that was always like a, well, don't do drugs. And then, you know, you have like family members that drink and stuff. And it's just like, okay, well, don't fucking do that, you know?
Right.
So it's just kind of like, well, I'll stay away from that. And then, you know, my vices are cheeseburgers and that eventually just is, that shit is just as bad. So it's just like, I had that going in, but it's a different ball of wax because definitely like being in the city as a young, cause you're a kid. Like if you look at some of these kids, they're like 20, 21 and they look like babies. I guess that's I don't know. It's just a weird thing that just these are fucking kids and you throw them in this thing. And I kind of wish that I would have applied to NYU for grad school. If I could have did some things differently, I would have applied to more graduate schools, but I still like where I went. But yeah, Chicago was a little more, it's just like a smaller New York. Chicago's like what, the third largest city in the country, I think. You know, it's a cleaner New York. You know, when I would go see shows, like I would see, like, you know, back then it was like Music Soul Child, The Roots. I would go to Hard Rock Cafe, House of Blues and go to shows. And then I would go to friends' plays and all that stuff. And it was definitely a different thing than being in Emmitsburg, where – people would get mad at you if you went to Sheetz and didn't tell them. Like Sheetz was like, you know, 6 or 7 miles away, and if you went, you know, like on a Friday night and didn't tell anybody, what the fuck you went and you ain't tell, man, you know. So that was just like, that was the thing. That's all you had to worry about. And then maybe Gettysburg College, I remember seeing the Roots for the first time up there. Like Gettysburg was, Pennsylvania was like 15 minutes north. So I saw Busta Rhymes there, you know, like the Roots and stuff like that. But I saw a story that you did, like a YouTube clip of right before you start, when you were starting Get Up DC, when you were at St. Albans, you talked about getting in trouble because you, I think you would spray Italian dressing on people in the shower.
Oh yeah. So I've always been a bit of a troublemaker at the same time. I know there's a lot of dissonance with this idea of me being this nerd and this hyper overachiever.
Yeah.
But comedy first expressed itself in me with like pranks and stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're in an all boys dorm. Like we're going to do pranks, but like I was always the one to take it to the next level. So, kids would take pictures of ice cold water and throw them on people in the shower. And so, of course, I had to take it to the next level. And I found, you know, I would go into the school refrigerator because they had these huge, like, industrial-sized refrigerators that they were using to feed basically the whole school. But we had access to it because we were in the dorm.
Yeah.
By the way, so I stayed in the dorm in St. Albans.
I was going to ask you, what was that like? Like, how was that? Like,
that was one of the greatest experiences of my life. And I'll be honest, because... Okay. It was inadvertently. So what St. Albans did essentially was that they saw that their student body was very homogeneous. Uh-huh. And I don't know if this is by virtue or by necessity, but they decided that they needed to reach out and start to provide access to different students from different backgrounds. So,
sure. So
they started this dorm. Because essentially, you know, St. Albans is up in Northwest and, you know, Friendship Heights, Tenleytown. So you basically, unless you live in like, you know, Bethesda or, you know, Rock Creek Park, all that kind of stuff, it's not, it's kind of hard. It's kind of a difficult commute.
Yeah.
And they don't have buses, right?
Okay.
Kids are driving Range Rovers and Lamborghinis. And I don't say that facetiously.
Jesus.
So they ain't no buses. So they started a dorm for kids that didn't live in the immediate area. Well, what happens is when you start to reach out to try and diversify your student body and you put all of those people in this one, you know, in this one entity, in this one group, which is called the dorm. Well, now you have a dorm made up of basically all black people. So even though there was only 3 black kids in my graduating class, I was in this dorm where it was all black with like one Japanese exchange student and like a dude from England. Literally, huh. That was what the dorm was. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Cause that, you know, to the extent that I could be a member of a fraternity or like have brothers, that was it. And my best friend to this day is Brandon Victor Dixon.
Oh, sure.
Who I was in the dorm with at St. Albans.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, we've known each other since we were 13, and that was an amazing experience. And so a big part of the dorm was having people to lean on when you were having difficulty with, you know, when you're having difficulty with a lot of what we're facing with everybody else with the student body, right? So a lot of that kind of inferiority complex and the self-loathing and the judgment and all that and the racism and all that. Like I did have, you know, people that I could talk to about it in the dorm. To
That's
the
good.
That we have those conversations at that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we used to do pranks on each other and, you know, they used to throw cold water. So I took it to the next level. I would get Italian dressing. So I hit to this day, Brandon, brings up the fact that I hit him in the shower with a pitcher full of Italian dressing, which, by the way, because it's oil based, you can't wash it off.
Yeah.
So he's in the shower, but he can't wash off the scent of Italian dressing.
Damn, that's fucked up, man. So he
literally walked around smelling like Italian dressing for like 3 or 4 days.
And then he became an evil lawyer on a hit TV show.
The other thing I did, which was my favorite prank, was they had these ceilings. You know those ceilings that have like the little breakaway part where you can like hide stuff in the ceiling?
Yeah.
So we had those, and we weren't allowed, you know, this is pre-cell phone, so you weren't allowed to have like televisions unless you were a senior. So kids would have like these little camping TVs that they would hide in there. Of course, porn was big. And our computers aren't fast enough, and the internet isn't advanced enough to have it on the internet. So this is the days of magazines and VHS tapes. So we would hide those up there. So what I did, I took a couple of milks from lunch, and I put them on my ledge, and I left them out there like for weeks. And I snuck in this kid's room and hid the sour milks up in his ceiling. And he comes back in, and all of a sudden his room literally smells like somebody took a dump in it, and he can't figure out where it's coming from, and tears up his whole entire room, and he can't figure out. It was so bad that I had to sneak back in and take them out because he was freaking out about where the scent was coming from. I did it again, though, when I took a plate of fish from dinner, and I left that in his ceiling, and it started to attract flies.
Oh my god, dude, you were an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much.
Jesus.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So I guess, man, I kind of don't want to do the corny how'd you start comedy thing. You started in New York, and you obviously were a success. And while I have you on here, since you're such a DC guy, I want to know your take on the team formerly known as the Redskins or the Washington Football Team. What do you think they should? What do you think the name should be? Do you have any suggestions? What do you think?
I initially liked Red Tails. I like that it's a good way to come out of this with something that is like the antithesis of what you had. Mm-hmm. But I'm also sensitive to people saying that they didn't feel represented by the Red Tails because it's not necessarily a DC thing. Now, that of course assumes that Giants is a New York thing or Eagles is a Philadelphia thing.
Sure.
But that aside, I can understand that. I'm kind of have been convinced by this Red Wolves. A lot of people have been saying Red Wolves, and initially I didn't like it because it sounded like we were St. John's or some college that just randomly picks an animal mascot.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of what you can do with that is pretty cool. Like, I like the idea of like having like a wolf pack and, you know, being able to howl at games. A lot of the mock-ups have been pretty cool. So I've been convinced by Red Wolves. I'm good with Red Wolves. People said Warhogs, not Warthogs, but Warhogs, mm-hmm. because they used to call us the Hogs back in the day, and you have the alliteration with the W. I'm good with any of those. Initially, I was okay with Warriors, but it seemed like Warriors was really a way for them to try and keep the Native American iconography.
Right.
So given that they're going away from that, you probably don't want Warriors. And, you know, why not give us something that's our own? So
yeah.
I'm down with any of those, but I think Red Wolves is the one that I like right now.
I do too. I like the Red Wolves or the Bannockers.
That's funny. Did you see what Joe Claire posted?
No, what did he post?
The Dippers. And it was a picture of PCP.
Oh my god.
On the helmet, and it just said the Dippers.
Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah,
that guy.
By the way, I didn't know this, but I'm a very big fan of the National Geographic show Drugs.
Okay.
And they had one all about Dippers, which by the way is PCP for those of you who don't know.
Mm.
They said DC has the worst quality of drugs in the nation. I didn't know that because it was so it's so hard to get drugs into DC. So because of all of, you know, I guess because of all the police or whatever. But that's why PCP is so big in DC. Like they literally were like, you can't get good quality drugs into DC, so they make their own. I was like, that's interesting. I didn't know about any of that.
Do you even think we'll get an NFL season this year? I don't think we will.
No, I don't think we will either. But I think they're going to try as hard as humanly possible because of all the money on the table. And I also think that you've seen these NFL owners, you know, Roger Goodell, on behalf of the NFL, has said a lot of things about social justice and Black Lives Matter. These owners haven't said anything.
Right.
Right. A lot of players have expressed their concerns about the virus. And, you know, the league has expressed concerns about the virus. These owners haven't said anything. Like, reminder who these owners are, right? Mm-hmm. These owners are the people that are lobbying and pushing politicians to move in a certain way.
Yeah.
This is them, right? This is their business, and this is, and they have some control, some degree of control, over how it goes. Obviously, they don't have control over the virus, and that can force them to stop eventually. But I think they will have to get to that point.
Yeah, it's just the arrogance that they think it's going to happen, and then even in college, you know, they're talking about just only doing the interconference games, but yeah, I know they're I don't see it, man.
College has the issue, and this is interesting, fascinating to me. How do you have college sports when school isn't in session?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then still call them student athletes, because they've been using student athletes to not pay the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's their excuse. So how do you continue to go with that when you're clearly treating them differently than you're treating all the other students?
I've been saying ever since Maurice Claret, so that was like 2002 maybe, I just knew the emperor has no clothes, and I just kind of turned away from college sports. You know, you kind of, I root for the black guy to win the Heisman, you know, but other than that, I just kind of, it's like, ugh. And I don't even know. And we've talked about this before on your show, how I loved, you know, college football, and I would, you know, do, you know, transcribe notes in a marble notebook, those black and salt and pepper notebooks and stats and all that stuff. And I just, it's not the same. And these, if somebody dies, then that's a lawsuit. That who said it? I think Michael Wilbon said, if you have somebody die, a college kid die from this, your season's over. It's over.
Yes.
Like, what's the kid from Maryland that passed away from maybe just having heat exhaustion or some kind of something, yeah, like just, and he, it's over. It was over for Maryland after that. The coach got fired. Yep. Just, it's, the optics are just not good. As much as I would love to see this stuff, I'm kind of worried about basketball. And I know that's happening in a couple weeks.
I mean, did you see the tweet from some woman who said that she's already been invited into the bubble?
I did.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you saw the player for the Sacramento Kings who has to go into quarantine because he left the bubble to go pick up Uber Eats or whatever it was.
Oh, so, my God.
It's looking rough.
All of this so we can get LeBron a chip.
Pretty much.
I want him to get it, but I mean,
pretty much.
It's going to be an asterisk around it. You know how they hate LeBron.
It'll be an asterisk for Jordan fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
For LeBron fans, it won't be. You know, of course, LeBron fans will point to, you know, Tim Duncan, and they'll point to, you know, this guy and that guy that have questionable chips. They'll point to the expansion of the league, 96, 97, 98, when Jordan got his ring. You know, and there's an explanation for everything.
Yeah. I just... I guess nobody, I don't know. It's like kids going back to school. I mean, you kind of feel like they don't care if the kids go back to school because they don't care when they get shot when they're in school. I don't know. I just feel really weird about all this stuff that we're continuing to do. And, I don't know. I don't know, Reese.
Well, look, I'm sensitive to people who need resources so that they can work.
Right.
Right. I'm sensitive to that. And I'm also equally sensitive to parents who don't want to put their child in harm's way, mm-hmm. as not to potentially be a carrier to put them or another loved one in harm's way. So I think that having some access to facilities, but having it always be optional, mm-hmm. is a must. You know, I don't think there's any way you could demand or warrant that parents do anything with their children, and given that there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah.
But at the same token, this is a time when, you know, if you need people to get back to work, and a lot of people need to get back to the work for their own, you know, for their own sustenance.
Yeah.
You have to enable them to do that. And that's the function of government. That's what they're here for.
Yeah.
If they're operating properly.
Right. Right. I see where some school districts are saying, you know, kids, you know, they can go back, they can alternate, you know, so it won't be so full, you know, two to three times a week, AM, PM group and all this stuff. So, I mean, things are in the works, but I don't know if that's just like on the local level. And then, you know, I heard someone say, you know, they have an option to go to a charter school if their district doesn't accommodate what they need. And it's an interesting time, you know. But God, I don't want to end that on such a sour note. I know you're not playing PlayStation, so I'm not going to ask you about that.
I need to get back on The Last of Us so I can get the second one. I need to finish that.
Okay,
that's my job.
It's not for everybody. I will say that the part.
No, it's dope.
Yeah.
Wait, part two is not for everybody.
Part two, there's like, I've never had an experience with a video game like that. They're treating it like, you know how people were upset about Star Wars and stuff, this new iteration, like how they just hated everything about it because it wasn't what they wanted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say that it's the best game and experience I've ever had in my life, part two. And it's not always easy. I don't agree with a lot of... There's choices that were made in the game that I don't agree with, but I still appreciate them taking the risk that they took and really trying to expand the experience. So it worked, but I just wouldn't. I would cautiously recommend it. But if you like the first one, you're in for some shit with part two. It's heavy. But I'll say at the same time, like, this is the first game that I've started back replaying, right after I finished, kind of. So I'm, you know, I would say that Ellie is my favorite video game character of all time.
Wow.
It was solidified after playing my first playthrough of part two.
Okay. That's tough talk.
Yeah, man. It's great. But plug Get Up DC. Plug the stuff that you got going on, man, because you're really doing cool stuff. And I admire what you do, man.
Thank you. So, anybody that's in the DMV, make sure you check out Get Up DC. It's the 6 a.m. morning show on WSA9, which is our CBS affiliate. And even if you're not and you want to check it out, I do a final thought, which is a commentary every day, and I post that on social media. And then we do digital monologues as well about a lot of things involving social justice. So those have been popping lately. So make sure you check that out on social media, especially on Instagram. And then, as you mentioned, every Saturday morning at 11 a.m., we do the Barbershop, which you've done several times, bringing in local thought makers, comedians, journalists. We had Donnie Simpson on. It actually doesn't have to be local. I treat it like it's local, but because it's on StreamYard, on Zoom, we actually don't have to. So that's something for me to do. But make sure you look out for that at 11 a.m. And people can sign up for my newsletter, my website, MrReeseWaters.com, because some Korean hardware store took ReeseWaters.com. I don't know what Reese Waters means in Asia, but evidently it's a fire name because they took it immediately after Reese Waters became available. Yeah,
and don't say anything bad about them because don't ruin your bag like Nick Cannon just did.
Yeah, I want Nick Cannon, so I'll stop there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I did like that record Gigolo that he did with R. Kelly, and both of them are now toxic. So, all right, Reese.
It's going to have to go the route of the best of both worlds. We just pretend it never happened.
Yeah. Can't listen to Immature. Can't listen to R. Kelly. No Nick Cannon songs. Do I have to get rid of my Drumline DVD?
You have to let me hear what he said, and I'll get back to you. I haven't heard what he said yet.
Yeah, when you hear it, text me, because okay. It's not good. It's like, why would you do that, dude? Why would you do that? All right, well, hold on to the line, Reese. Thank you so much for doing the show. Guys, we'll talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.